Great. Hi, everyone. This is Tom Andriola, Vice President and Chief Information Officer of the UC System. I'd like to thank everyone for joining today to talk a little bit about shared services. And I'm actually going to marry shared services to concepts like innovation and entrepreneurship as we go through the course of today's presentation. We got interest for this particular webinar because of this presentation or a similar presentation that I gave with Bloomberg a few months ago. But I wanted the audience to know that this is actually a topic I've been talking about quite a bit, starting with an initial presentation in Washington, D.C. last November. I mentioned Bloomberg in February of this year, and actually some of the slides here today are different from Bloomberg because I just recently talked about 2 weeks ago down in San Diego about very much the same topic. And we've been sharing some of the new ideas that we've been propagating throughout the University of California with other universities and public sector organizations around the nation. And we've been getting a lot of very, very interesting comments and interest in what we're doing. And I think it's based on some of that interest that some people who, for one reason or another, didn't get a chance to join Bloomberg, wanted to kind of hear this story and some of the things that were going on. Granted, we are a very, very large system, having our 10 universities, 5 medical centers, 6 medical schools, various institutes. So, at any given time, there's so much going on that, I feel very privileged to be at a system-wide level to even get a chance to see all of it. And I know when you're at a local level, you sometimes can see certain things and not others. So happy to share, and I'll point to some examples of some things going on around the systems that are really kind of seeding these thoughts in terms of how we do things differently going forward. So I'm going to start with, kind of talking about the challenges, and this was part of the presentation and discussion down in San Diego, where we were talking about the challenges of higher education in general. And, one of the points I was making to the audience, and we had about 100 people in the audience from across not just California but the country who were talking about shared services in a higher ed environment, is regardless of what type of university you're from, but certainly more prevalent in the public universities, is that these challenges that we're facing is that we'll never see things go back to the way they were. And this is part of something that I like to allude to called the Stockdale Paradox, made famous by author Jim Collins, in terms of dealing with realities as they are rather than trying to think of being overly optimistic about things how they should be. And so we talked, just in terms of in setting the stage for why are we talking about cherishes? Why are we always looking about implementing them, how we're implementing them, the challenges of implementing them, come from some fundamental bases that I characterize around a SWOT analysis, and really 3 major challenges that are really, I believe, driving the conversation towards shared services at institutions like ourselves, whether it be at a campus level or at a system-wide level. So first is, and we're all very aware of this, in terms of the change in funding streams that come from our state. There's always this constant battle of us going and making the case to go back to funding levels prior to the financial crisis, but we're really never going to see those types of days again. And while we have those challenges in funding and developing different revenue streams, we'll constantly and forever be pushed on the topic of affordability of a college education to be able to meet the needs and the pocketbooks of people of our state and people of our nation. And so I think it's dealing with the fact that, the pressure to keep college affordable, with the fact that the revenue stream that we've counted on the most over the years to build up the universities, we'll never see that go back. And so we have to really think differently about, the affordability versus funding equation. Second is, if you follow some of the studies that come out, whether it's at a national level or there have been some very, very distinct reports come out in California, is we're about 1 million four-year bachelor degrees short in 2025 of what we need to keep our economy at the same level it is today. So while we struggle with the state funding, while we struggle with having enough classrooms and enough dorm room space for our students, the reality is that if you look at the economic needs of our state and the changes coming in our economy, the state is about 1 million graduates short in terms of the capacity to push students through the system and the need of our economy and the employers of our state. And again, this is a fundamental difference of how we start thinking differently about what we do and what is our role. The third is, I call it the retiree reality, and I didn't include all the slides that we used in the San Diego presentation, but I like to talk about the retiree reality because as I talk to our campus leadership across the University of California, you know, I get statements of, you know, basically between 25 and 35% of our employee base is eligible to retire in the next 5 years. And we all know someone who we work with who kind of is in that category and when they leave. And one of the things that has come from all of our very locally implemented solutions of any type is that, you know, we have a tremendous amount of institutional knowledge of how a certain process works at a very local level that's tied up in that person. When they decide it's time for their, you know, next life stage and they leave the university, then, you know, we have to deal with the fact that there's a gap, right? And that gap is in knowledge and how a local practice works. And it also gives us the opportunity to think about, is that local practice really beneficial to the overall campus or to the overall university system? Because while Jerry may be willing to come back on a 43% basis, Jerry's not always going to come back. And so we have to deal with the reality of the fact that we are going to have a massive percentage of our workforce turnover, and we're either going to hire back one for one, which doesn't help our affordability equation, or we're going to think a bit differently about how we provide these services to our campus stakeholders. And so we talk quite a bit about that, and one of the things that's very interesting about the three topics, the three bullets you see here, is they were pretty much echoed across the country by every segment of higher education, whether it's community colleges, state, or research universities, and to a certain extent also by the private. So this is wasn't something that is unique to our environment, but something is very much across the board, you know, kind of a challenge for the for higher ed organizations. You know, one of my big concerns coming in from outside of higher education, most of you who've heard me speak before, I've only been with the University of California for 2.5 years. I was not in higher ed before that. I spent a lot of years in healthcare. So, you know, the healthcare environment, what we do with the medical centers is much more deeply rooted in the way I think. But, you know, one of the things that we talked about with the group is I'm sure people are aware of the story of the boiling frog. And this is the, you know, the incrementally changing environment to the point where we neglect to really accept the reality of the changes until things are too late. And so, you know, we talked about this in terms of these changes are happening to us, and we keep fighting back saying, well, they wanted to cut the budget by 10%. We fought them back. We only got a cut by 5%. We won the battle. And it's really not recognizing the realities of our situation and making the types of changes in the way that we think about the problem different. And this was, you know, kind of something I think it's necessary when you start talking about what do shared services mean to us and how do we approach them in the case of us as one of our campuses or as a UC system. And so I give credit to this slide from my friend Phil Searle, who's of Chasey Partners. If anyone has been involved in shared services in higher education at the University of California, you have met Phil or you've listened to him speak. And, you know, Phil and I share some background together in terms of, you know, we both spent many years in the private sector. We've both been a part of implementing shared services in a corporate environment at a very, very global scale and scratch our heads at times and wonder why we can't get it to work more effectively in the higher education environment. Certainly the cost pressures and the necessity to do more with less is there just like it is in the for-profit sector. Certainly the opportunities to look at different parts and different services around a campus to be able to adopt common approaches is there. But the recognition that approaching it in higher education requires a different approach than what you would see in the private sector. But that the opportunity to do it is there. There's a cultural aspect to this that is a constant challenge. Again, the conference that I was at in San Diego with about 100 people, probably 60 to 70 institutions represented, all talked about the challenges of shared service in their environment. Many of them were just talking about at a campus level or trying to get more of their campuses to adopt. But it's this concept of, you know, the challenge of wanting to be served very, very locally and very close to me versus this concept of an organization that I don't know quite as well that may be across campus or in our case, maybe in another part of the state, how could they possibly do as good a job? And this is where I think the ones that have been successful have approached this with in a very data-driven way, in a very culturally sensitive way. But certainly, you know, as I get to talk to these groups more and more, both here and across the country, the challenges are real. The progress is slow, and it's slow and steady wins the day around getting shared services to work. And so, you know, me being the newcomer to higher education and, you know, initially not understanding why this seems so hard here, why can't it work here as it's worked in other environments? Because what I've seen over the course of my career, having been in different industries, is sometimes, you know, one industry will adopt something, but it takes time for it to seed its way into other industries. You know, is to try to look at, you know, kind of what is working and what is not working around it, shared services in higher education, studying successes as well as failures, both inside our universities and across the country. Again, I've talked to more than 100 universities, campus level shared service people across in terms of what are the biggest challenges. Understanding a little bit different the nuances of the public sector versus the for-profit sector. My own experience is not only with shared services, but really driving organizational change. And really I talk about in terms of, you know, trying to put this as a fresh set of eyes on the initiative. And I'm going to talk about this in terms of needing a bimodal approach to thinking about shared services. One that has a combination complementing way, top down and bottoms up. And over the next couple of minutes, I'll explain what I mean by that. So I'm sure everyone on this call, since we're all here at the University of California, is aware of the UC PATH program, you know, or the HR payroll replacement program. Certainly, it's been around for a number of years. It's been a highly polarizing topic across the university. You'd be interested to know that many, many universities across the country are watching this program to see how it goes because of the size, scale, and scope that we've taken on with the PATH program. They're very interested to see, you know, how we get this done and what lessons that they can use from it to bring back into their own environment and be so. It is one that is, I'm never surprised how many people know about our PATH program. So, you know, as most people know, it was launched in 2011. I explained to audiences from other parts of the country that this is not about a systems project. This is really a business transformation program for the university, fundamentally getting us, forcing us to rethink how we run the university and how we, you know, how we design processes and now starting getting into how we organize activities at locations and how they'll work with our UC PATH Center down in Riverside. I explained to them about the process standardization aspect of this and the hard work of getting multiple locations to really think about a common business process model and the type of governance that we needed to have in place just to have a conversation to get to agreement around those things, how we've thought about this as really not just a one-time event, but as a platform for shared services to build upon so that while we're starting with the HR payroll functions, we see this as a platform in which to grow into other aspects of HR and other, call it, back office processes to find future efficiencies, but also have the accommodation of common versus local requirements being met. As you know, we went live with the first site in November of 2015, and you can go to the PATH website to look at the upcoming deployment schedule that's ongoing. But I talk about this because, you know, this is what I characterize, and these are just my words. This is a top-down approach. It was driven, you know, from the top down in our organization, emanating from something that was discussed at Regents down through Office of the President. Certainly the campuses over the course of the years that we've been doing this have talked about, you know, how the top-down approach doesn't align very well for them. And, you know, it's been, a work in progress, and I give the team a lot of credit for how they found the balance of top-down versus local-up into how we've designed the governance and decision-making around the program. But what came out of this for me, again, having done this in a different environment, on actually a larger scale than what we're doing for UCPath, both in terms of number of functions and services and in terms of user base and in terms of complexity of different geographies and cultures, is that these are really hard. They were hard in a corporate environment. It's hard here for a different set of reasons. And that something like PATH is going to take so long to implement that the nature of our environment is changing so quickly that we can't rely on just a top-down approach to meet the demands that the future of higher education needs of us. And so, we talked about, and again, this comes back from looking at some other experiences that I had, that we need to find I won't call it a different approach, but I'll call it a complementary approach, because top-down is going to be necessary, and as I mentioned earlier, we see PATH as a platform to grow into other things. But we needed a complementary approach that was more ground up, more of a peer-to-peer nature, and something that was more congruent with the culture that we have here at the university. Because it's clear to me looking at PATH is that while we will get it done, we will be successful, we will build upon this, that it does go counterculture in terms of how we have grown up as a set of 10 universities under one umbrella system. And so we said, how could you create a different approach? And so I scoured through higher education, public sector, even different types of business models, and to say, is there a different approach that could be done in addition to what we're doing with programs like PATH? And so we came up with this concept of a bottoms-up approach, one that was based on finding a best practice and how to expand upon it. Because if you look at it, all a shared service really is taking something that's done really well and expanding it to more customers. That's all a shared service is. Take away central versus decentral. The concept of a shared service is that a unit that's providing services is doing it for more than one customer. And so, we found that if we could find the opportunity to take a best practice and expand so that it was absorbed or subscribed to by multiple customers, we could then basically build a bottoms-up shared service approach to complement programs like PATH. And what was interesting is that as we went around the system to test out this concept, we found roughly a dozen examples where this had actually organically had grown. And I'll point to a couple of specific examples. If you think about an application like UC Review for academic faculty reviews, started at an individual location and ultimately was adopted by other locations. UC Recruit for faculty recruitment, again, a common application starting at one location. Everyone saw the value, like, that's better than what I have here. Let me adopt it, and now it's used at most, if not all, campuses. UC Assist is another example of that, something we do for articulation between the different segments. It's actually an IT application that is subscribed to by all three higher ed segments in California. TrialQuest, something within the healthcare systems. It's a clinical trial search tool that goes across multiple locations that allows us to find patients for clinical trials. So what we found was that this was not a new idea, but it was an idea that was somewhat unstructured, happening organically, but it wasn't repeatable. And so this bottoms-up approach, which we kind of, have now kind of broadened and started to call it UCIT Innovate, or UCity is the acronym we sometimes use, is this concept of a locally led, system-supported shared service approach. We say locally led because it usually emanates out of a local best practice. My goal is to have OP to play as little a role in that as possible, because we know the dynamic that the campuses have with OP, or really any unit with the center, is sometimes problematic. And so we want to support these activities by really helping them expand themselves by teaching them how to go from a local, I have one customer practice, to a shared, a shared service where they're providing it to multiple units. That could be within one campus setting, or it could be across multiple campuses. Again, it all meets the definition of shared services, which means I have more than one customer. And so we brought together the people who were doing it, and we talked about how they did it, what were the challenges. We also looked at some high-profile failures where we attempted it and it didn't work out for one reason or another, and said, what were the key things, that the critical success factors that we didn't pay attention to? And what we found was that there was a lot of similarities. We could pull out some common themes about how people got it done and got to the point where they had a multi-site shared service. So we said, okay, we now have some concepts of some critical success factors that we can build upon. How do we find the next dozen? And so what we did is we did kind of a call for people who thought that they were doing something really well, and we gave them an opportunity to pitch their idea to an audience of both IT and non-IT people to say, we think this could be a shared service within the University of California. And we actually ran that last fall down at Irvine. We just called it a Shark Tank event. And so it was kind of a pitch to a panel and get some feedback. And, out of that, we've kind of taken some of them and we've continued to invest time and energy to say, you know, this is a pretty interesting idea. How can we continue to grow this locally led approach? Because, you know, I would subscribe that, you know, 100 locally led shared service initiatives could equal as something as large as a UCPath, and we could probably make it happen in a shorter time frame than UCPath if you think about the challenges that were happening. So again, this is a complement what we're doing to the top-down approach. As we started to look at this, we started to say, you know, we don't need to stop there. Some of the examples that we had, you know, and I'll use the example of Risk Services and Solution, which is a Davis-based team, but providing environmental health and safety tools and compliance reporting to all 10 campuses and all five medical centers, is that the concept of going from a local service to a shared service is just a step in what could be a broader, repeatable process. And so we started, and this is where Risk Services is right now, and a couple of others that are moving there, is in terms of, you know, our innovation and our adoption of this at multiple locations is so good, you know, it actually has applicability to other customers outside of the university. And so how do we then take these practices and teach them how to be almost like independent businesses? And then, you know, you could think of a fourth step, which is step three is providing that service to non-UC customers. Four could be a true commercialization stage where we actually spin it out into a new company that's usually partially owned by the university still, but is now its own separate entity. And so if you think about President Napolitano's initiative around innovation and entrepreneurship, this fit very well into that model, but it wasn't something that was faculty-driven. It was something that was more staff-driven. And so the evolution here, if you look at the left side of the page, is, again, this is right now within the context of just the IT function, is to get our IT managers to start stop thinking like keep the lights on, but start thinking like innovators and how can I do this to a broader set of customers. So starting to think like intrapreneurs, right, the internal version of an entrepreneur. How do we turn this into something that actually drives a new revenue stream? All right, and it starts to move the thinking from one that is shared services, which tends to be about efficiencies, to expanding the scope of what we do for other customers in innovation and even into an entrepreneurship. And if you think about the challenges we have in IT in terms of keeping good people, motivating people, giving people growth opportunities, what a fantastic model this could be to essentially provide a growth path for our people going forward and provide some ability to do things here that, you know, we've actually had this conversation. This is a really cool idea, Tom, someone said to me, because while Google's a cool place to work, Google wouldn't let me do this. And so I see it also as an opportunity to retain our staff and to grow people in a way that maybe other organizations can't. And so this actually linked up very nicely with many things that the ITLC are working on. One of the concepts here is that, you know, if we're going to try to generate a lot of local activity towards shared services, it's really a numbers game. You know, what you want to do is to get a lot of things into that pipeline because there are going to be a lot of things that don't work out for one reason or another. And so it's a funnel, much like when you're pursuing new customers, you have lots of prospects at the top of the funnel and only a handful of customers fall off the bottle, out the bottom. The concept is similar here. We want a lot of opportunities, right? I liken it to, Pete Rose. If you're a baseball fan, you know who Pete Rose is. He, you know, in addition to being somewhat of a troublemaker, he also owns the record for the most hits in a career. And if you ask Pete Rose, you know, Pete, of all the players who ever played this game, why is it that you had more hits than anyone else? What was your secret? And he said, clearly, there was really only one secret. I had more tries than anybody else. And so I really think that this is similar. We want to create a lot of opportunities, a lot of ideas for what we could do, and put them through a structured, repeatable process of innovation to allow them to move through this concept. And again, that doesn't just start with something we have today. It might start with, I have an idea for something we might do in the future. So we've developed this concept of how do we go from idea to commercialization and create a repeatable process for that? And there's many things that the ITLC are sponsoring under this. So, for example, you may have heard through one venue or another about UC Next, which is our expanding ideation space where people can go out with ideas, find similar people to collaborate, find people with expertise that they need to tap into to grow their idea. We've talked about, the community building activities and trying to tap into the full 7,000 or so IT professionals across the university. We have the blog, which now has close to 900 followers, growing very, very fast. We've doubled it in about the last 120 days. We are doing a lot of webinars like this, looking at collaboration platforms, doing different types of programs like the Shark Tank, where we give people an opportunity to really connect with people in the IT community across the system and find ways to work together. That could be the launch of shared service. It could be a launch of new idea. But the concept is no one is as smart as all of us. The concept of the UCity program is how do we create a support mechanism for people who want to do this? I tell people all the time, it's like, look, OP's role in this is going to be, we're going to be an evangelist and a cheerleader and to try to create a support mechanism. This is not about, free money. It's not about doing the work for you. This is around people who have the innovation to go do this. But what we've seen is that there are things that, people who are trying to grow a shared service aren't going to be good at everything, and they could really use some specific types of expertise that they could like to tap into to be able to kind of get access to. Not that they want to hire someone to do it, but I really love to bring someone in because I can see going forward I'm going to need to get to more agile development practices, right? Or I don't really know or have anyone on my team who knows anything how to do marketing and communication, how to actually find a new set of prospects. Can I tap into someone to do that? And so we're building these support mechanisms in. And then this is really a new set of muscles, right? To go from an IT manager to an innovator to an entrepreneur is a hard journey. Having been someone in the course of my career who's played all of those roles, it doesn't come overnight, and it doesn't come without an investment into people's development. And so whether we're talking about the leadership program that we partner with the Haas Business School, the development of kind of boot camps to be able to kind of give people some of the raw skills that they need to be able to go do, tapping in and teaching people how to do, like, how do I set up a pricing model if I want to do this for more than one customer? What's the difference between, what we do today in requirements gathering and product management? If I do multiple customers, I have to do product management. What is that? How is that different? And so what we're trying to create here is really, create a platform for change to evolve what IT does across the university, move it into higher values, and that it's a program that people can tap into. It's driven from the bottom up. It's activist oriented, and it's not something that we try to manage closely, but it's an organic effort that we let people tap in and do things and add value in ways that they can find that fit with them as well as with the time that they have available. So we really expanded this to go beyond just the concept of how do we do shared services. And the final slide before we open it up for questions is really around, I've heard this comment so many times, working with our university. It's the concept of that, universities, it's about letting a thousand flowers bloom. And I get it, and I buy into it after kind of watching the amazingness of our organization. I get it that, we have a lot of unique people with amazing skills, and we need to let them go do what they do. But there's another thing that I know from my other side of experiences, which is truly great organizations are great because they know how to take innovation and scale it. You know, if you look at what Intel has done and why they've been at the top of their industry for, you know, close to 50 years, it's because they know how to take something that comes out of one of their labs and take it to a tremendous scale. And I think this is something that while a university may have 1,000 flowers that bloom, it's about finding those truly great flowers and figuring out how to give them that flower to many, many other people. And I think that the IT and the role of technology is perfectly positioned to help universities do this, whether it's to drive efficiency gains, new revenue streams, or just great reputation about being a fantastic place to work and a place to go grow your individual contributions to an organization. So those are my prepared comments, and I'd be happy to answer questions from the group or get into a dialogue about it.
The conference has been unmuted.
And as Leah said at the beginning, we do have the ability to see on chat, and so I'm going to try to get to some statements here. And I had one or two people who said that they wouldn't stay the whole time, so they sent me some things in email as well. So someone's first comment is like, sounds like fail quickly. And I'm like, and I'll say yes. There's a fail quickly aspect of this, and I'll be the first to recognize that unfortunately, somehow we've allowed our environment here at the university to be one where people are afraid to take risks, which I find kind of almost contradictory because, you know, our faculty members are all about taking risks if you talk about the research community. And somehow we've convinced ourselves in our IT community that we're not allowed to make mistakes and we're not allowed to give people the chance to try something new and fail. I think allowing people to try new things, using failure as a way to say, hey, that's a learning opportunity, I don't think we take advantage of it well enough. And I'm hoping and always open ideas on how we can find ways to make it okay for people to fail here. Here's another comment that I'll read part of it. It's like, hi, Tom, I'm from an academic unit from one of our locations. Most of the shared services we are seeing are in the administrative types. How do we get this to happen in the academic side where local units tend to say our faculty need custom things relevant? So, I'll point to a couple of things, right? So there's academic administration and then there's academic period. I think when we look at academic administration, you look at things that are touching the faculty like UC Recruit and UC Review. They're academic administration. So there is this concept of with the way that we touch faculty in terms of managing certain faculty processes, there is wisdom and buy-in, a successful buy-in about doing that. How do we, you know, one of the things that we've tried to study is how did they both come to be and is there a way to incent more of them and to make them happen more quickly? Because in some cases it took literally years and years to get them across all of our locations. When it talks about the academic environment, you know, one of the things I'm learning working on ed tech space is the importance of faculty to faculty kind of peer recommendation, which does take time, but is very powerful. And we have some growing concepts where we really are using the faculty as the spokesperson for this is a great idea. More faculty should look at this as something that they may want to adopt. So rather than, let's say, an IT person or an administrative person being the spokesperson, find a faculty person who's willing to step forward and do a peer recommendation. And we're doing something in the research IT space right now, which is very, very interesting. You know, you may know we ran a research summit at UCLA last March. We had 100 faculty members at that event. We invited members of that audience back to a Friday morning call, and we had 70 participants come back on a Friday morning, faculty members, which is quite amazing. And they came back, and the people who presented the concept of what we want to do around collaborative research IT cross-location were faculty members. They presented the story to their peers, and we just felt that that was a much more powerful message coming from a peer. And so again, we're getting better at and smarter at how we go about this. And I think it's those types of things that will help us make progress. It's not a silver bullet. It is still very, very hard work, slow and arduous at times, but I do believe that it makes a difference. Will there be more U-City meetings? Gosh, I hope so. You know, I think there's a combination of things here. You know, the one we did last fall in Irvine, it truly was an experiment. It was an example of this may not work. This may fall flat on its face. I went in with that attitude. I had risk in the equation as well, both from the standpoint of people being able to turn around and say, see, Tom, this doesn't stuff work, as well as people I asked to take a day out of their time to be on the panel. But it worked, you know, and it gave me confidence that we are onto something here and that we need to do more of these things. I think the difference between running a Shark Tank where we present 10 ideas and what we've been doing more recently, which is take an idea that's got some legs and let's get it into that support mechanism. That support mechanism might be about something like, let's bring in a resource who knows how to do a market analysis and can build a market analysis to figure out whether there's really a market here. Okay. Let's bring in someone who can actually help us build a business case for how we would build this from a, you know, one customer setting to 100 customer setting. So we've been doing, rather than Shark Tanks, we've been doing kind of more targeted work efforts, or I'll even call them consultations, to help these shared services kind of accelerate themselves. One of the things that's very key is that, you know, this, you know, whoever is the shared service owner and says, I want to find a way to get more customers, they're doing the hardest work, for sure. They're finding the time in their schedule to invest into this, building, you know, kind of building their stories, building their pitch decks, you know, sitting down thinking about how they would do pricing, how they would do governance. We're supporting them, but they're really doing the hard work, which means the ambition has to be there to drive these things. Any messages from the group, since anyone can talk at this point?
This is Charles McIntyre from Santa Cruz. Thank you, Tom, for this presentation. It's great to hear what's going on in this space. I've been thinking about it, and I really like the idea of the U-City innovation pipeline. You know, with the idea that, you know, say you have a good idea and you're able to do a prototype, but, you know, it's a completely different skill set to get that prototype into production at any scale. And if we were able to have the ability to really support people's prototypes and scale them and have gates and training, it'd just be a really incredible support structure for innovators and entrepreneurs.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, and Charles, you know, recognizing you here, right, is, you know, you were one of the individuals who really helped launch the idea of UC Next and having an ideation space. And, you know, I mean, it, you know, to me, it's all about the number of ideas you can generate. The more ideas you can generate, the more likely you've got one that kind of hits the sweet spot that you can do something with. But what we found kind of talking to people who've tried to do this or have had a desire to do this and didn't get anywhere is the support mechanisms are important from the standpoint of, you know, I'm not good at everything. I became successful at what I've got going right now because of the things that I'm good at, you know, whether it's building a team or, you know, driving the development of something or, you know, making it run very, very efficiently and highly stable and reliable for my customers. But, you know, when I enter into this new space, when I go into the innovator space, I'm now into foreign territory. And it's nice to know, and this is, again, what we're trying to do with the support mechanism, is when you go there, that, you know, there's somewhere you can reach out to get a helping hand. And that's the whole idea. And, again, I come back to this community building thing. We've got 7,000 IT people in this university across all of our campuses and medical centers, et cetera. And all of our local IT people, they all know something. They're all good at something or they wouldn't have a job. And so the question is how do you find them and how do you bring them into your situation? You know, and there's some very, very interesting concepts on the table with Next, you know, that would allow us to really kind of leverage the power of 7,000 people And you have to think about that, right? I can go, you know, and point you to a heck of a lot of IT companies that you know that we actually contract for services that don't have 7,000 people in our organization. But we have to kind of start thinking about that we're part of a very, very large community that if we learn how to tap into the power of, we could do amazing things. People are writing dissertations here in the notes, which is awesome. It just makes it really hard for me to read. So someone asked me a question about, some things that would help. You know, my shared services that I'm working on are, you know, some system-wide tools around topics like master data management, integration platforms, standards, document management, workflow. So there's some things that are kind of really, really helping. You know, some of these things are things that kind of allow you to kind of scale and get to a place where everything isn't so built for the one-off customer, but allow you to create a level of configurability around your solution, which, again, is kind of a critical thing when you go from the one customer to multiple customers. And this is, again, where product management comes into play. If you start talking about building a software product or software as a service, you get into product management and thinking about how do I support a diverse set of customer needs with a set of on-off switches that allow them to do different things and not have to write specific code for every function that a customer wants to do. For that topic, you know, there are some conversations going on, but again, it is challenging to get the university and all of its locations to agree on things. We have a very active architecture group that I think, at least in my 2-plus years here, has made some good progress on creating a set of principles around architecture that most, if not all of our locations buy into. I think that kind of sets a framework. Principles are always a good place to start when you're trying to get to agreement. We've struggled in the tools level conversation, to be perfectly honest, about adopting tools that everyone chooses to adopt. Some of that is, we've already invested into certain tools and there's a cost to switch and that cost is not in my budget and I don't think anyone's ever seen anything like this, but, you know, just to bring it up, you know, sometimes smart people don't agree. And, you know, there's just a fair amount of that we have in the system that there's no one way to do these things. And so people just can get very, very wed to their way that they've implemented locally and, you know, the desire to change is just not there. So I'd love to say that we're working towards, you know, kind of standard platforms for people. It's certainly talked about at the ITLC at just about every meeting that we have. Progress, though, is relatively limited, but it certainly is not a dead conversation. Another comment here, concept of think globally, act locally can be applied. Absolutely, I would agree. Too often, departments gradually iterating solutions which only serve their needs instead of forming birds of a feather campus-wide or system-wide work groups. You know, this is where community building, I think, is important. One of the things that I'm able to do from my role is kind of find the birds of a feather and say, hey, why don't we have a get-together? You know, matter of fact, we're doing this with all the people at the campus level who are responsible for running shared services at a campus level. We're putting them all together. That's the latest one we're going to be doing next week. I can tell you, I've probably, since I've been here, done 6 or 7 of these on different topics. Never do people walk away saying that was a waste of time. When people who have a common challenge or a common topic come together, it's amazing just in terms of the learning what others are doing. It turns out to be a very positive experience. The challenge is, and one that we as a community have to figure out how to overcome, is the time and cost of getting people together face-to-face to create that exchange of knowledge and learning is not scalable. We can't always call a system-wide meeting and get all of the architects together. We have to find a way to use technology to connect people, and this is where some of the community building and the ideation space concepts came from, which is how do we use technology to actually help us connect people, whether it's, you know, connect people about, I've got an idea, who can help me, who's expert in this can actually help me launch this, to, hey, we're all struggling with the same thing, and there's no benefit for us doing it 10 or 15 different ways. So, and again, I go back to the concept of the retiree reality. We are going to be faced with a situation, an opportunity to reduce this complexity every time we get that into that 40-year veteran who decides it's time for them to move on to their next life stage. And the question is do we just kind of let it flow, or do we have a proactive way in which we say, here's how we're going to capture that and roll that back into a smarter approach, right? And smarter should hopefully be better service level as well as a more affordable cost. So I think we have great opportunity here if we can kind of, find the right balance of being organized, but also letting people's initiation of activity locally drive things. And again, this is where I think having a set of principles to drive off of allows it to be a very, very organic activity at the end of the day, which to me, that's the way it has to be with an organization of our size and scale. Yeah, here's a specific example that came from Stephanie, right? So UCSF is really good at hosting a particular document management system, and I would like to see them also that hosting for other campuses. So let me take Stephanie as an example in terms of how we're trying to help groups like that. And again, it's not a perfect model. It's an evolving model, and it doesn't always translate to success. Again, the concept of I need a lot of at-bats to get a lot of hits. Right. What we're trying to do is when someone stands up and says, one, I want to try to do this. I want to take what I'm doing here in document management. I want to try to create it for other campuses to take advantage of. First of all, we congratulate them on their ambition and that they're willing to step into a place where there might be failure. We try to celebrate that. The second is we say, we want to be real here. This is going to take some hard work. And the reality is you're probably not going to be rewarded for that work locally. So you still want to do it because that is the reality, is that nobody really gets rewarded, though we'd like to find a way to change that, for going above and beyond their day job. But we see people all the time who want to take that step. We try then to give them the tools about here's how others have gone about this and what's worked for them and what hasn't worked for them. That's part of the support mechanism, right? It's the knowledge and experience. And sometimes it's like, here's a template. So now you're going to go into a world where with multiple customers, you need to work in a more of a service level agreement type way than maybe you do today. Here's a service level agreement that one of the other campus groups use. Take that, modify it, and now you don't have to create it from scratch. That just saves you X amount of hours or days of work. So, all right, and it's like, and now it's like, okay, here's the reality. The only way you become a shared service is to convince another customer to buy your service and pay you for it. Because if they want it for free, it's not really going to benefit you. You're not going to be able to scale that. So how do you create a message that people can say, yes, I like it, I buy it, I want to sit down and talk about how I get it for me? Right? That's easier said than done. And most IT departments haven't grown up having to justify and expand their existence that way. Some have, but most haven't. And so how do we teach them how to do it? So this is kind of what we're trying to do, right? We're trying to give people the support, access to experience, knowledge, people who've done it before, and say, here's how I went about doing it. And here's how maybe you could take some of those examples and fast track what you're trying to do. Okay, another question from my friend Lori Graham. Any chance we can get to a single shared email and calendaring platform?
Please.
Please, right? So, again, this is where, lots of campuses are invested into certain places, and it's very, very hard to do, right? But it's a great example of, one, nobody looks at email and calendaring as a competitive advantage. It is a commodity. Look at how many of our campus environments are moving to, an Office 365 in the cloud or, in the Google Cloud, right? So, sometimes the answer is not one. Sometimes the answer is less than the number we have today. From where I sit, if we're reducing the numbers versus expanding the numbers, we're going the right direction. Nice thing is I got enough career runway that I feel like I can be patient and work within the constructs of our culture to be, get it a little bit at a time. The key for me is never let the momentum die. When we have momentum around the topic, how do we jump on it? But getting to one, Yeah, that's going to be a tough order for us as a university, given, you know, how we've all grown up together. Can you talk about how you see these and these concepts of tying into competency building catalogs? Not sure exactly what I mean by competency building catalogs. Whoever Frankie did, could you give me a definition of what you mean by that?
Just on the current slide, you're talking about these different programs and what are some next steps for resources and readings and ways to tie into UC Next and UCity and things like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, UC Next is out there for anyone to go join today, right? You know, one of the things that we're trying to do is we're trying to take the pieces on here. We're going to try to tie them all, you know, to tie them together better than what they are right now. If you're not part of the UCIT blog, which is the single greatest group of people, critical mass that we have of IT people, you know, seeing the same information, it's even larger now by an order of magnitude than more than double what we know to be UCCSC listserv. Get into that to get connected into what's going on. We're going to try to tie more things through that. UC Next is something that I think is very interesting for people to get involved in right now. We're getting to launch something called, the ability for every UCIT person to have a profile. We're going to do it through LinkedIn. We're not going to reinvent the wheel. We're going to do it through LinkedIn, and we're going to set up a private group for our university. Actually, LinkedIn was very excited about the idea because of the size and scale that we were bringing. And this gives the ability to say, here's what I'm really good at based on not just the job that I'm doing today, but things that I've done. And so if someone needs to tap into my expertise, they now have a much easier way to find me. Because right now it's word of mouth and your personal network. We need to get beyond that. So, we're still trying to figure out how do we build repeatable ways of sharing knowledge and giving people access. The boot camps concept is relatively new. How do we kind of run something that people can come in and out in a day to give them a very, very kind of targeted, intense set of knowledge around a certain expertise that they need to kind of get into their own personal toolkit or into their organization. How do we teach people? And this is one of the things in the Haas program. What is a value proposition? How do you actually write a value proposition statement? How do you translate that into your business case? These are the things that we've kind of identified so far that we got to figure out. How do we package something that people can consume on their own time or get into some type of environment with peers where they can kind of have an intense interactive session on? But this is, this is kind of where we're going with it, but it is still evolving. Another topic here. Main driver for me is working with the vendor is difficult, and the vendor is hosting for us. There are not too many supplier alternatives other than trying to host it locally, but OneCamp's already doing good at it. Yeah, I mean, local hosting is, again, something that the more we know about what each other are doing and what someone's good at, the more we can actually find that there are options. UC Hastings is adopting the same time writing system that Irvine is using. Why? It's because, someone at the ITLC made a presentation and they said, hey, I don't need my own system. I could use another system as a starting point. So I think, the more we know about what's going on, and this is, some of the ideas that we're piloting in the research IT, if we actually catalog what services were available and we put them in the concept of a marketplace or an exchange and people can actually find them easily, maybe the first place they would look is there rather than saying, I got to build this myself, which we do have challenges in certain places around the university where the first reaction is, let me build something. And also it's, hey, what's the difference between using the high-performance computing cluster that's at UCLA versus using Microsoft Azure? Is there anyone who can help me make the decision around that? What are the pros and cons of each? Because they seem pretty similar when I sit down and read the descriptions. So how do we create a support mechanism? And this is something that's happening in research IT right now. The concept of a concierge service to support the user, in this case would be the researcher, to make the smartest and best decision for their situation. So I think we're getting there. I know that we're looking at some things with UC Path and hosting the UC Path going forward. we're looking at some of the campus groups that are hosting PeopleSoft today as one of the options of as an alternative. Why? They do seem to do a darn good job, and we're not so sure that our provider is the best choice for us going forward. So let's look at some other options. So, again, it's all about that, you know, none of us is as smart as all of us, and we just need to tap into that in a way and trying to create a structure where people can do that much more easily and even, I'll call it, frictionlessly as we go forward.